Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hey, hello.
Derek, you're not even in the building today.
No, I'm in pseudo-quarantine.
Way to go.
I think I just have a cold or something, but I didn't want to come and infect you guys. So I am recording remotely tonight the fantastic technology.
Yeah. And
my voice might sound a little off tonight.
You sound like you're stuffed up.
Oh, I'm super stuffed up.
Oh, it's bring your disease to work day today.
Yeah. So I'm clogged up on one end and completely unclogged on the other.
Oh. So like a bottle with the cork on the wrong end.
Exactly.
Just awesome. The other hand, I'm feeling just absolutely peachy. Fantastic, if you will.
Shimon says that I overshare.
Oversharing would be like posting a video.
Okay, I'm not going to do that.
That's oversharing.
Anyway.
Anywho.
This is back to COVID days, recording remotely.
Right? With a better headphones.
Yes, with a good set of headphones. Gamer headset.
Gotta like that.
Yeah.
The bad old days.
Yeah. They make my ears sweat, though.
What, and the ones that you use here every week don't make your ears sweat?
No, they don't, actually.
Really? You know why? Because I know how to buy headphones, buddy. What's the worst thing to happen to you today? My ears sweated.
Exactly, yeah.
All your life is horrible.
Yeah. It's all good.
So what else is up with you this week?
And other than being a little bit sick, not really much. I was supposed to go on a canoe trip, but I never even told them I bailed, but they never did ask if I was going, so I pseudo bailed.
When? This weekend?
Yeah, it was not this weekend. It was this weekend. It was supposed to be, as the recording goes out, I should have been on the water.
Really? Right?
Or am I thinking?
No, you're a week ahead. You're talking about that canoe trip. You're a week ahead.
I'm a week off. I'm all foggy. Yeah.
The meds will do that to you.
Yeah. No, I'm not using meds.
Okay, then it's just you then.
Yeah.
No, it's not this weekend. It's next weekend.
Oh. Okay, so now I got to come up with a different excuse.
Right? I feel another cold coming on.
I seriously thought it was this weekend. I was looking at weather and everything.
No. 2 weeks from now. 2 weekends from
okay.
now.
Okay.
So, all right. Nothing new here either.
No.
I've just been catching up on a lot of chores that I wasn't getting done, moving a whole bunch of stuff into a storage unit and
stuff like that. Your first storage unit, eh?
My first storage unit. And I got, it's filled with stuff. Lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff that won't see the light of day for at least a year.
That's the hard part, eh? It's kind of, you weigh it. It's like, okay, I'm going to put this into a storage unit, but the longer I store it, it would have been cheaper to buy new stuff.
So it's hard to find.
You have to balance it.
Yeah, but when you find a body you actually like and want to keep, and your wife says you can't keep them at home because we got to put food in the freezer, you go out and get a storage unit.
Exactly.
we just got so much stuff all of a sudden that's we're looking for places to store. So I just said, you know what? I'm just not even going to. You ever get to the point some days in your life where you just aren't in the mood to deal with it? So you just take the easiest way out. So I just went and got, because we got couches for grandma. We got furniture for son. We got all this stuff for daughter. It's like, you know what? I'm just going to get a storage unit and shove a whole bunch of crap in there because I don't want to deal with it.
And it's a decent climate controlled one, is it?
Oh, yeah.
So that's good. If you're storing furniture, you got to do that.
Well, and that was my thing, is I didn't want one that was outside, because I wasn't sure if there was anything glass going to be in there, electronics going to be in there. And
yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it's climate controlled inside. And push comes to shove, there's a fold-out couch in there and a chair and whatnot. So I can just, you know, fine. You want to do that? Yeah. I'm going to go to the storage unit and live there. There's a Tim Hortons nearby. There's a grocery store nearby.
Excellent.
I'm good. Yeah.
It wouldn't look suspicious at all.
Not at all.
This guy shows up at 5 p.m. every night and leaves at 6 a.m. every morning.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Yeah. He likes his stuff.
Yeah. It'd be neat.
Yeah. No, it's just one of those things. I'm just like, I just didn't feel like taking the energy to wrap my brain around doing stuff. So I just took the lazy, easy way out, got a storage unit, and shoved everything in there.
It does get expensive over time. I'm in the process that I need to start unloading stuff, because I have a storage unit after a while, and I have to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. It's just awesome. They keep raising the price.
Yeah.
So,
well, when gotta I, get rid yeah, of it. When I started looking at them, I guess 2 years ago, I was contemplating one. I really didn't need one, but I thought, what if I got rid of a whole bunch of stuff and just stuffed it in there? And I was looking at her, oh, well, they're not that bad. But then I figured, yeah, I don't need one. And now I've gone back, and they're like, whoa, hello. I should have bought stock in the company 2 years ago.
Oh, I know, right? I know. Yeah, so this, Access Storage, I think you have the same storage company as me, Access Storage.
Yep.
Boy, they make a bundle of money. They got units all across Canada.
Oh, yeah.
Big bucks.
Helping me out.
Yeah.
And there's a young guy that works at the front desk there, and he's got a old Ford Escape.
Oh, okay.
And I said, do you have snow tires for that thing? And he goes, no. And I said, well, my friend, let me help you out, because today I will be your savior when it comes to snow tires. I got four of them sitting here that have one season on them, and they're holding up my kayak right now.
That worked out. That's awesome. Right?
So, yeah, well, now I just got to make a couple of sawhorses for my kayak.
Yeah. But this guy now has a nice set of winter tires.
Right? On
That's
rims.
Perfect.
On rims. You know what? Young guy, he's probably going to drive all winter without, because he can't afford them. So, you know, if he can get a freebie. Yeah. It's one of those things, I wish somebody would have done that for me at that age.
I know.
And no one ever did.
Yeah. Yeah, he did him a solid, and he'll do a solid to somebody down the future. Yeah, I know.
No, that's exactly it. You know, if they're just sitting there, like I say, I'm using them to hold up my one end of my kayak. So, you know,
And they were sitting indoors. They were sitting on concrete, but still, they're sitting indoors. No UV light ruining them, so they should be quite healthy tires.
All wrapped and everything.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
Yep. So, like I say, I'll just take them over. Tell him to open back his car.
How excited was he?
Oh, he's, well, until he gets them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that guy, he's going to give me
tires
in every game.
Yeah.
Liar.
Yeah.
And then I'll show up, I'll have a big bow on them. Merry Christmas, buddy. Merry Christmas. Bye.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Anywho.
What do we have for us tonight?
We're going to talk. Well, there's a couple things we're going to talk about a little later that sort of same topic, same background. But let's start over in Sweden.
Sweden. Bork.
The Stockholm Archipelago.
Okay.
Sprawling collection of 30,000 serene islands, rugged islets, and rocky skerries, peppered with spruce trees and shrubs, and splashed out across the blue of the Baltic Sea. How does that sound?
It sounds wonderful. I got to look this up on a.
He's going to look it up. You've had all this time, and now you're going to look it up.
You've been gone down this rabbit hole. I've been sleeping all week.
He's been sleeping. although these mostly untouched islands are scattered across vast areas, many are clustered densely together, creating calm, shallow channels ideal for kayaking. pitch a tent on an out on the outer reaches of this dreamy archipelago, and you can watch as the sun sets over the water completely unobstructed. Now, when I first started looking into this thing, this place here, there's a lot of it that reminds me of Ontario, Northern Ontario.
It kind of reminds me of the Great Lakes. Yeah. Look at that.
Like, just the looks with the different, the small, all the small islands and everything like that.
It's just off the Baltic Sea, across from Turkey, Estonia. Look at that.
See?
That would be a nice place to paddle. I never knew this existed.
Me neither. Hence why we're amazing. Talking about it today.
Yeah.
A heavily trafficked area. Even among Swedes, if you don't have a family home out on the archipelago, you probably don't know what to do or where to go, says Adam, a local kayaker and route planner. There's 30,000 islands to explore. Our guests say it's a little bit like a maze.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. There's a handful of larger islands in the archipelago, some long inhabited by farming communities, others known as the old haunts of Sweden's great painters, but many more are simply rock and shrub islets that look much like they would have when first sculpted out by the last ice age over a millennia ago. And despite being under an hour's drive from the Sea of Stockholm, a city itself built on islands, by the way, which I did not know, few know the archipelago exists. Fewer yet have explored it.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. So Adam, along with Jacob Rudberg, is the co-founder of the Kayak Trail, a new paddling route which enables kayakers to navigate the waters of the archipelago. And I'm going to tell you right now, there's words in here and place names and stuff like that tonight I'm just going to absolutely butcher. So let the fun begin.
Absolutely.
The trail, well, they put all the little dots over the O's and the A's and the all that sort of stuff. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Trail runs past old limestone islands into Balera Nature Reserve and Nemda, one of the biggest islands of the archipelago, and deep into Nemda Skargarden National Park, where it's unlikely you'll see another human.
Yeah.
See, doesn't that sound more and more like Northern Ontario?
Yeah.
Stockholm Archipelago has been Sweden's best kept secret, says Jacob, except we don't want to keep the secret. We want to spread the word. Most people who come to Stockholm, the capital, don't even know about the archipelago. We created the trail as a tool for anyone who wants to explore the archipelago. Even if you have your own kayak, it's on the water. So there are obviously no physical markings, but it's a digital resource and a physical one in terms of maps. Recommended routes to take in order to see the best places you can see with a kayak and in a safe and sustainable way, steering clear of bird protection areas and making sure you're close to land whenever it's possible. So you want to Google that. The kayak trail.
Yeah, I saw it come up on Google. Mm-hmm. Now, a question. How long did it take Ariane to learn Japanese?
She's been there a year, and she's speaking it fairly well.
There you go. I assume I could learn how to speak Swedish within a year, 18 months.
See?
Yeah.
Time to retire.
I know.
So I say you do this. You go over to Stockholm, get a place to live. Learn the language, get a couple of kayaks, let me know and I'll come visit.
There you go.
And I got a place to stay. All I gotta do is show up.
I do occasionally, like I look at these property things on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And so I do see Stockholm pop up all the time for these remote island cottages for like, you know, however many... What are they, kroner or something? I don't know. But it's like all these things are cheap. And so it's like, hey, I could live there.
Right?
Looks amazing.
And then winter hits.
Yeah, well, I'm used to winter here. I couldn't be any worse than here.
And then the dark season hits.
The dark season. The latitude isn't that high.
Yeah, but I think it's still darker a bit longer in the year than it is here.
So they are, oh yeah, they're halfway up Hudson Bay, halfway up Hudson Bay.
Uh-huh.
So it would be a dark season.
Right?
Yeah, Alaska type thing. The same latitude as Anchorage.
See? See? So you're getting Alaska weather.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not so much now. Yeah, just think of the ice fishing, though, and the skiing, and the snowshoeing, and the winter camping.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the dog sledding.
Wow, that'd be... Oh, Sweden's large, hey?
Have you ever looked at Sweden before?
No, I've looked at Norway.
But not Sweden.
No, I've been to Norway, so I've never been to Sweden, so I never thought of it. Wow. Oh, wait, I think I might have been to Sweden before.
You think?
Yeah.
But you're not sure.
No, I'm not sure. I'm trying to find the name. So it was when I was at Navy, we had a main steam line break and we had to anchor off someplace. And the only place to go was, all they could see is sheep. And then there was like a 45 minute drive into the nearest town that had like, you know, 1,000 people in it.
And isn't that Scotland? Said,
oh, you know what? It might have been. We're Scotland at, because we came out of Oslo, Norway. No, it wasn't Scotland.
It was Sweden.
It was Sweden. It was right in near Oslo. We came out of Oslo and broke a main steam line, had to anchor. So yeah, it was Sweden.
See? You've been there. You need to go back.
Well, I didn't go ashore. They said the town was too small. It wasn't worth it. Like, I think a half a dozen people went ashore to check it out to see if it was worth going ashore, and they said, not worth it.
Maybe it was so good they lied.
Maybe.
Right? Now you'll never know.
Could be.
Anyway, there is another trail, the Stockholm Archipelago Trail, 167-mile, 270-kilometer hiking trail over 20 islands, running from Arholma in the north to Landsort in the south. Trails are on the larger islands because most of the islands are so small, you can walk around them in 5 minutes.
We're still in the archipelago?
Yep.
What are the two names again?
From Arholma, Arholma, in the north, to Landsort. Landsort. So you go paddling, and then you get out, you do a hike, then you get back in your boat, and you paddle some more, then you go to another spot, you do some hiking. Some of it goes through old forest, or a cultural landscape where there has been agriculture or there are small red cottages. The trail passes lakes where you can swim and goes up to viewpoints. So you're getting both.
Yeah.
On Bullera, archipelago, there's a public sauna.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. There's a long history of both agriculture and people living permanently there, but also of artists out there in the 1800s and being inspired by nature by being out there. Sound familiar?
Just get
out there.
Oh, yeah.
Just be. This is 1800s. They were ahead of their time.
Yeah, or they're still behind. There.
Yeah. Famous wildlife painter Bruno Liljefors bought a collection of islands in 1908.
He bought a collection of islands. I'm not going to buy one island. I'm going to buy a couple.
I want that one and that one and that one and that one. Built a studio from which he would paint in 1909. He would hunt, paint, and party with Albert Engström, another renowned Swedish artist, and Carl Cederström, a pioneering aviator known as the Flying Baron. Not the Red Baron, the Flying Baron.
Life is good, eh?
Mm-hmm. Of course, in the product we're launching, says Jacob, with Much Better Adventures, it's an adventure company, we include both. You kayak on the Stockholm Kayak Trail, and then you also hike on the Stockholm Archipelago Trail.
Oh, we should go do this.
Right? The new four-night adventure offers adventurers the chance to wild camp on the islands, truly explore them, and heading out on the wild edge of the archipelago. Combining the two trails is perfect, says Adam. The kayak is the best way to get yourself between stretches of the Stockholm Archipelago Trail. If you only wanted to hike, there's a ferry lines, but is much more logistically complicated. In the kayak, you can just go to the next island. It's true. I mean, if you go to an island and you're not too happy with it,
yeah,
you just jump in your kayak and off you go.
Go to the next one.
No waiting for ferries.
Yeah.
It's an amazing area, and we don't have any tidal waters. So no strong underwater currents or anything like that. It's almost like being on a lake, but it's the Baltic Sea.
I got to look at these. There should be tidal waters.
You're Googling all this stuff. Lots of islands are quite close together, so you're seldom exposed. You can almost always find a semi-sheltered route, and you're usually close to land. That means no kayaking experience is required as long as you've got a guide. Because, they're saying it's like, some people say it's like a maze in there.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Right.
So what I'm seeing is it's a very narrow channel around Denmark through between Denmark, Copenhagen. And so any tides would be condensed in there. So you wouldn't really get much of a tide action in the Baltic Sea. That's amazing.
Right?
Huh.
Maybe half our guests are completely new to it, says Jacob. The rest might have kayaked once or twice before, and there are groups that do regular kayaking holidays. A lot of the archipelago is very shallow as well, so it's inaccessible with, for example, sailboats or large motorboats. In a kayak, you see the landscape up close. Huh. We started the trail initiative to help people get out regardless of whether they use our services or go by themselves to lower the barriers. When we design our trips, we try to include as much service as possible. So essentially, you come to Sweden, and then we can pick you up and drive you out, and we'll have everything from food to camping equipment to kayaks and guiding. Which is exactly what I'd be expecting from Derek if he moved there.
Exactly.
So pick me up. Take me out.
Yep.
Feed me. Give me camping equipment and kayaks.
I have to build a couple guest cottages.
Right? Our guides know about the nature reserves that you're passing, about the fishermen, and why there's free-roaming sheep on some of the islands. See, this just gets better as you go along.
I know.
Right? We focus a lot on transferring knowledge to our guests. We talk about the public right of access, which enables anyone to wild camp basically anywhere, and the Swedish tradition of using rules and our philosophy, do not disturb, do not destroy. And we know that as leave no trace.
Exactly.
Vast majority of these islands are completely isolated and peaceful. Of course, there are some busy spots, but we know them, so typically we pick another way. Some people don't want to meet a single other person, and we'll tell them that come at the end of August, and that's possible. Other people do want to explore island life and see the culture, and we can do that too. There's a smorgasbord of opportunity.
Ooh.
Right?
That's one of the only Swedish words that I know.
Smorgasbord. Swedish version of crowded is also very different from other versions of crowded. If we go to an island and there are three other kayakers, we will call it crowded. Even in peak season, most of our guests, at least some nights, will be alone.
Yeah.
Part of the archipelago is in the Nämndöskärgården, Sweden's newest national park, and the first marine national park in the Baltic Sea. It was only inaugurated this September. So that's pretty cool. Brand spanking new national park.
Oh, I'm trying to make my laptop work here.
You're trying to figure out how to spell this, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Nämndöskär Garden.
Yeah.
Nämndöskär Garden.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah, there's a lot of... What are those little... I'm used to something who's not the graph with French, but they're little dots above the AO and the A.
Oh,
the A.
Yeah. I know in French, they're accent aigu and accent aigret. And yeah. I know Motley Crue's got one over the U.
Yes, they do.
I can't remember what they're called.
Anyways.
It is now the highest level of nature protection in Sweden. There are very strict rules on what you can build out there, so it really feels like you're out in the wilderness. And then we have very special geology of the archipelago. It's mainly rock carved by the Ice Age, so it has a very rugged nature feel. But in the summer, it's so warm and welcoming. Archipelago is home to some of the home to World of Wildlife gray and harbor seals, razor bills and skuas, white-tailed eagles and ospreys, and roe and fallow deer on the land. Lots of animal life, and it's likely to see it if you kayak.
Yeah,
especially the seals. There's something about seals. Now, would you rather meet a seal in your boat or on land?
Are they friendly? this sounds like the that. Or you want? What do you want to meet in the forest? A bear or a man?
Right. No, I like to see seals swimming by, but you always see the ones that are jumping up on people's boats, like their kayaks and stuff. Yeah. No. You want to swim by me? We're good, buddy. The minute you jump on my boat, we're done.
I'm gonna freak out.
Right. But on land, it's cool that you can probably get a little bit closer, even though you shouldn't. But you're going to get a better look at them. And they don't move as fast. And they look so cuddly. But yeah, I'd just be worried about when trying to like jump up onto the boat.
Yeah.
It's like,
And like anything, like you can, everybody says, I want to see otters. I want to see sea otters. But then you hear stories about otters attacking paddlers. It's like, oh, that's vicious.
Right.
So last thing you need to be is attacked by some rando angry seal.
How was your trip? Well, it was great up until a harbor seal took Derek out. Big fangs. It got
his head
neck.
Right off.
Yeah, bit his head straight up. Jumped right out of the water. Head gone in one go. It was both terrifying and fascinating at the same time.
It was fascinating. I didn't know it was possible.
And you know how you see in the circus the seal balancing the ball on his nose? But picture that as Derek's head.
It's Derek's head.
I'm going back to Sweden.
I got pictures.
High def. Increased protection means restrictions on boats and how fast they can go, which is nice, but you can still wild camp in the area, and they want to protect that tradition of outdoor life. Sweden has lots to offer, and the archipelago is especially amazing, but almost no one knows about it.
Yeah, it's very remote.
Right? Perhaps the most astounding thing about this place, given its proximity to Swedish capital, is just how it has managed to go under the radar for so long. That'd be like no one going out to Georgian Bay.
Yeah, exactly.
And hitting all those islands.
That's what I keep thinking. I keep thinking this is like Georgian Bay is a very, 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 very smaller version of the Swedish archipelago.
Mm-hmm. But imagine if nobody went there.
Georgian Bay. Yeah, I know, right? And which would be very unusual. And here, the Swedish archipelago, that's a lot. You can see all the islands. What are they, 10,000 islands or something?
30,000.
30,000 islands. Yeah. Sheesh.
Even though we're remote and in the wilderness, where we are is only 45 minutes into the city by car. 45 minutes!
Huh. A quick grocery run.
Yeah. Huh. People often stay a couple extra days and add a city break to Stockholm.
Huh.
Swedish capital is a vibrant and charming set across 14 islands and lush with greenery. But in this quiet archipelago of 30,000 islands, the mind can free itself from the strain of modern life. If Stockholm is a showcase of past and present Sweden, the archipelago is the perfect embodiment of Sweden's outdoor heart.
Very amazing. I don't know how I've never known about this or heard about it.
45 minutes from the city. You know what my problem with work is? Or if I were to live there?
Yeah.
Being able to work from home.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't be at home. I'd be 45 minutes out of the city. Sitting on an island next to my kayak doing my work. Then I'm just going to take a paddle break, maybe a hike break. I wouldn't be working from home. I'd be working from my kayak.
I'm doing some Google driving instructions here.
Yeah.
And not even out to where some of the locations are, like just in the center of the archipelago down, just picked a random town. It's only a half hour. So you can get way out in the archipelago and it's just a half hour drive. There's some tolls, but who cares?
Right.
There's some construction near Tjusvik. And but you can go around that, I guess. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So cool.
The Stockholm Archipelago. Check it out. And if you're looking at going overseas somewhere, then maybe Sweden is your next stop.
Future goals.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to send us a ton of money, we will go and tell you how good it was.
Yes, we will go buy a chalet and describe it to you.
Yes, well, we'll tell you how good it was and whether you should indeed go or not. We're willing to go there and
check it out. Sacrifice for you.
Yes, we'll take that sacrifice and go and check it out for you so you don't waste your time on some place that may not be worth your time.
Exactly.
Go to our webpage, paddlingadventuresradio.com, hit the contact and send us a message. And we'll gladly take your money.
This is amazing.
Right?
All kinds of pictures are coming up.
See, now you're going down the rabbit hole. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to start looking at real estate.
Speaking of rabbits. Rabbits are animals. And you know what else is animals? Monkeys.
Uh-oh.
Monkeys. That's my segue, baby. Speaking of rabbits. Have you seen that video that's making the rounds on social media?
I have. I didn't understand. Like, the first time I watched it, the very first time, I was like, what's going on? I thought something was coming
out
of the water. And then I thought, is there an avalanche? Is rocks falling off a cliff? And then I realized it's a whole bunch of macaques jumping into the river.
I thought they were attacking somebody. And I was looking in the water for a person that was being attacked by all these monkeys.
Yeah, it's just what they do.
Yeah.
So they swim. They're swimming to the other side.
A peaceful kayak trip through Silver Springs turned into a wild show when a group of monkeys started leaping out of the trees and into the water. So, like, these are tall, tall trees, and it was like raining monkeys.
And
there's
this
tons
is not,
of them.
And this is not overseas either.
No, this is down Florida.
This is Silver Springs, Florida.
Yeah.
So, obviously, invasive species.
Yep. They were planted there back in the...
Yes.
1930s, yeah.
Yeah.
So kayaker Trenda Kitchen says she'd hoped to spot the monkeys because people go there wanting to see them, but she never expected what she witnessed. So, yeah, if you Google monkeys, monkeys Silver Springs, it's going to come up with that video. And you watch the video and you're like, wait a minute. She says, I was just totally flipping out. This is crazy fun. Yeah, because they're not jumping on you, Trenda. Wait till one of them comes over and they start raining monkeys on you. The rhesus macaques are an invasive species that were introduced to Florida by a tour boat operator in the 1930s, and they have thrived at Silver Springs ever since.
It's a very shallow DNA pool, though. They only brought over six of them.
Begin with.
And, Yeah.
Yeah. So in 1938, a tour boat operator, Colonel Toohey, released six rhesus macaque monkeys onto a small island, later converted to Silver Springs Park. His motive was to create a park closely resembling the Tarzan story. I mean, Tarzan back in the day, that was Errol Flynn or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Therefore, he procured the monkeys from New York City.
From New York City?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess.
But what he didn't know is this particularly species of monkeys are excellent swimmers. They escape the premises within minutes of releasing them. Thus, to replace them, six more monkeys were brought.
Broadening the DNA pool.
Uh-huh. They, too, escaped like the previous batch. By the early 1980s, these monkeys had already spread across what's now the 5,000-acre Silver Springs Park.
That's hilarious.
It was supposed to be an island, and now it's 5,000 acres.
Yeah.
But they swim. These monkeys swim. Not only that, but they have a high dive act.
Yeah. Oh, when they hit the water, it's like, it looks like somebody jumped off a skyrise. It's like they hit the water hard.
You're thinking somebody's throwing big boulders rocks or something into the water. Just all of a sudden, it's just like splash, 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 splash. Watch the video. Do yourself a favor. Watch that video.
Yeah.
Because you're going to go,
all
what
I've seen.
The?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hadn't read this story before. I only saw the video, and so I didn't know that they originally were brought into New York, then brought into Florida, and then released, and holy cow.
Run for it, buddies, run!
I wonder if they can estimate the population. I'd be curious what the population is now.
Yeah.
It's got to be in the thousands.
You would think there's, from 1930?
Now I need to figure out what, I'm curious what they eat. Well, like, what have they displaced in the natural ecosystem?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, because not like, wherever they came from beginning is what they're eating now. So whatever is there, they would have just had to...
They just adapt.
Adapt to it.
Because they're very smart animals.
Right?
Huh.
You know, this is how Planet of the Apes starts. A little island of escapees in Silver Springs, Florida.
Yeah.
Way
that's
to go.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Go watch the video.
Yeah, I've seen the video, and I had no idea it was in Florida.
Yeah.
There we go.
just keeping down that end of the country, or the continent, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
East Tennessee. The effects of Hurricane Helene. So we talked about this while back, wondering what the rafting season was going to be like.
Oh, yeah.
Right? After Helene, there was so much damage. The infrastructure was just destroyed. Roads, bridges, you name it. The rivers themselves were totally changed and whatnot. So Daniel Jeanette, the president of the Pigeon River Outfitters Association, said whitewater rafting participation on the Pigeon River in Hartford is projected to end the year with a 30% decline from its 10-year average of 192,812 visitors. Through September, the Cook County Clerk's Office said 134,290 people rafted down the Pigeon River, and it's expected to finish the year with about 135,371, which marks a 25% drop over 2024.
Mm.
That's a big drop. Jeanette says the primary factor behind the significant drop is the lasting effects of Helene, which caused I-40 to be shut down at the Tennessee-North Carolina line for months and is still only one lane each direction.
Wow, is that something?
Still. Outfitters and officials expect to resume operations on the upper mile of the Pigeon River next season after repairs to Waterville Road are completed. The swift action taken by our partners has been crucial in keeping the river open, but the data is undeniable. The infrastructure damage inflicted by Helene has seriously impacted the lifeblood of this regional tourism economy. That's Owen Claiborne, spokesperson for the association. Pigeon River's success is directly related to its status as a family-class adventure nestled into the stunning vistas and forests of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park region. Additional long-term investments must be made to restore and enhance infrastructure and protect its economic and recreational benefits. According to the Tennessee Department of Tourist Development, in 2023, whitewater rafting in the Pigeon River was 27% of all direct visitor spending in the county.
Oh, wow. That's a big loss, eh?
You're losing about one-third of all your tourist revenue.
Yeah.
Just because of a big, massive storm.
Huh.
So we were talking about that, saying, you know, I wonder what the outcome of the season's going to be. Is it going to be? Because at the beginning of the season, there was hope because there was they put the boat ferry in that they were getting people back and forth because the bridge was out still and being worked on and whatnot. So the people were doing the best they could to help out the businesses and stuff. So we were kind of wondering what the season was going to be like.
Well, there's just so many aspects that affected the season, right? It's access for the average person. It's the changing of any river runs. It's the washing out of regular runs. And so any guides are going to have to re-scout the river and clear up any danger spots of like trees caught up and stuff like that. So it's like, and you know, just to bring the tourist dollars back in so people can continue to make a living. And if it takes too long, people are going to move out and take away some of those resources for tourists and whatever. And it's just, there's so much that is affected by this storm in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. I mean, people still have to make a living, right? And they can't wait for.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, and when you're talking about the rivers, and the guides, if these rivers aren't the same anymore, they've got to not just scout them out, but they have to totally relearn them.
Yeah. If you're going to have a safe rafting run or a safe kayak trip, then you have to make sure you can keep your clients safe. And so you have to know the river.
Yeah. So that's where they are right now. So definitely a drop, and hopefully between now and next season, they can do a whole lot more, get the infrastructure back up, that won't be as big of a drop next year. Hopefully they're back to pre-2024 numbers.
Well, I guess it's good that Hurricane Melissa isn't coming ashore because that's supposed to be a big one, right? It's heading straight up the East Coast, but offshore. It's going to kind of peter out off of it by the time it hits Iceland.
Yeah, but it's already gone through Jamaica and it's hitting Cuba now.
Yes.
But it's gone from a 5 to a 2.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Because they weren't sure what it was going to do, right? They had no idea. So, thankfully, it's headed back out to sea. So,
yeah. there's a girl at work from Cuba.
Oh, okay.
And that's what she's been watching all day. Because, it's bearing down on Cuba there.
Yeah, exactly.
So speaking of Helene and that area, there was a thing called, in North Carolina, called the Green Race.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Right? Paddlers will soon return to the Whitewater River of Western North Carolina for one of the world's largest extreme kayaking events. After the destruction of Hurricane Helene sent the renowned Green Race on a year-long hiatus, the paddling community is gearing up for the race's 30th year, which is this week, November 1st.
So did they skip the 29th year? Is that what they've done? Or is they just moved the 30th year off a year?
That I don't know.
Yeah. Whatever it is.
So this is the race. So if they put it on hiatus, I got to think this is the 30th. So
yeah, they would have just moved
it. Yeah. So this week, November 1st, will look much different with the Green River's course reshaped by the storm. And this is what we're just talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
When Helene hit in September 2024, it brought historic rainfall, winds, and tornadoes to western North Carolina. With the destruction, North Carolinians saw drastic changes to their landscape and the region's rich network of whitewater rivers. The storm broke the hydroelectric station on Lake Summit in Henderson County, and the dam which controls the flow of water to the Green River is still inoperable.
Wow.
So, you know, when you're talking about Madawaska River here, where they do the training and stuff like that, how they release the water from the dam.
Yes.
Well, they can't do it here because it's inoperable.
Oh, and they used to rely on that release?
I would assume so.
Huh.
Right? They, controls flow of water to the Green River.
Flow of water on the Green River.
So.
Yeah, there you go.
Before Helene, the Green River saw 300 dam releases each year, which kept the flow of the river consistent and reliable for kayakers attempting to master Class 5 rapids, the most challenged type of whitewater. You know who's never going to do Class 5 rapid?
This guy.
What's got two thumbs and ain't doing Class 5? This guy. Not only did the dam break during the storm, but Kevin Colburn, the National Stewardship Director at River Conservation Nonprofit American Whitewater, said the rapids of the Green River Narrows were smashed to bits as massive boulders rolled down the river, piled up in new configurations, changing the flow of the river. Which means if you're zipping down there and you know, okay, once I get around this corner, I got to head to the left. Now there's a boulder right in your way.
Or there's a missing boulder, or there's a new hole, or there's a new something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bunch of sweepers or sieves or what have you.
Yeah.
This year, the Green Race will be held on a free-flowing river, and enough water must flow from Lake Summit to into the Green River for the race to be held. If the water levels are not right for November 1st, the race will be postponed to each following Saturday until the water flows between 100.3 and 100.8 feet.
Huh.
John Grace, the executive producer of the Green Race, said the ultimate decision to cancel last year's race came down to safety. While the water levels were high enough, Helene had washed away the access points and roads that would be used to evacuate a kayaker if needed. So, perfect sense.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. When you're dealing with these kind of rapids, you know, and you've if they had said, we'll go ahead with it and, you know, hopefully nobody gets hurt, and then somebody did, like, that would, you got to think of, as many people as were probably pissed off because they canceled it.
Yeah.
You know what? There's a reason.
It's going to be liability issues, and plus you don't want to bring harm to anyone, right?
So. No. We're in a situation where an already remote place became extremely remote, Grace said. In the past year, the Green River Conservation Project has worked to clean up the rivers and surrounding area damaged by Helene. Grace estimated the conservation team sponsored 400 hours of time on the trails to help regain access, and the group is now working on mitigating invasive species as plant life returns. The Green River is actually looking a lot better than a lot of rivers around the area, Gray says. That's a total testament to all the paddling community that has such a connection with it. The race usually draws 2,000 spectators, 180 racers, who hike 3 miles on steep, slick trails to get to the Narrows. Kayakers navigate rapids that drop 200 feet over the course of the 0.6-mile route, so less than a mile. Drops 200 feet, with the fastest racers finishing in about 4 minutes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why people go see that. That sounds exciting.
Right? But yeah, I don't want to be one of the guys in the canoe or the kayak.
Exactly.
In a study published in early 2024, kayaking and other river activities made up nearly 15% of all outdoor recreation in the region. Western North Carolina brings in a higher volume of outdoor tourism than other areas in the state, according to a damage and needs assessment released last December. 15% of all outdoor recreation is from that area.
That's massive, eh?
That is huge. Kayak instructor Townsend DeRoof spent the summer of 2024 leading tours with Green River Adventures in Saluda, guiding kayakers down advanced rapids. Helene caused so much damage to the Green River that the company paused its guided tours, and he had to scramble to find new river guides job for the following summer. After his summer growing comfortable with the rapids in the Green River, Townsend had planned to kayak the Green Race for the first time last year until the event was canceled. While he's unsure if he'll be able to race this year due to personal scheduling concerns, he is excited that the race is back on. He says, that's a big step forward that I think a lot of people in the industry are very happy about. And even for spectators, the return of the Green Race this year is exciting. Luke Womble, a whitewater enthusiast and former president of Appalachian State Whitewater Club, has attended each race since 2021. He watched friends compete, saw kayaker Dane Jackson break the four-minute race record. I think there's a video of that one. I remember seeing that the video of that one. And looked forward to returning each year. But last year, the paddling community instead gathered for a river cleanup and fundraiser. Womble attended the cleanup and watched video edits of past races with his friends. It was much more of almost a memorial feeling. We would go out, we watch all the edits of the area, and just were all there for each other. There for people that were influenced the most in the region by Helene.
Huh.
So, I mean, it just totally blew everything away, and with it, with, you know, a lot of people between whether they're just recreational kayakers, whether they were businesses, whether they were, you know, that was their jobs to be on those rivers, gone, all gone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hopefully the competitors can get a few practice laps in before race day, as the Green Rivers Rapids and many others in the path of Helene now look much different. Dyruff once regularly led tours on the lower green, a calmer section of the Green River, but after Helene, it was several months before the river levels were high enough for paddling. When he finally went back at the end of summer, it was all different.
Huh.
Rapids were completely changed. There were no trees along the bank at all. It was just a desert for a quarter of a mile from each bank for almost to the river. I didn't recognize a single rapid on the run, and I had paddled it every single day a couple times even the summer before. Kayakers who once knew every turn are learning to maneuver new routes with new risks involved. Sieves, which occur when the rock formation allows water to pass through, but not a boat or a human, are crevices that can trap a kayaker. Dyruff said, running the same rapids gets a paddler familiar with the dangerous parts of the river. He says he was much more cautious leading tours this past summer, hesitant to take kayakers down new rapids he was not yet comfortable with.
Such a difference, eh?
Huge difference. It's just totally changes everything, right?
As far as perspective goes, though, it kind of I'm reminded of the fact that the human lifespan and human, like, for example, we only live, like, on average 88 years or something like that. And you know, like the sport kayaking has only been around for less than 50 years. So we're looking at such a macroscopic scale of time for these kind of ecosystems. And you know, it's just kind of thinks, oh, we're such a blink in the eye. But really, in the span of our lifetimes, this is significant when it comes to lifestyles and jobs and tourism and so on. It's pretty huge for us, but in the grand scheme of things, it's a blink of an eye.
Well, you know what? That's what they say. Like, oh yeah, it took thousands of years for the glaciers to retreat and form the landscape. Yeah, well, it took one day for Helene to totally change it again.
Yeah,
right?
There you go.
True. Colburn says that new courses can be exciting too, and it's been fun to paddle unfamiliar rapids in familiar rivers.
That's true too. That'd be unique.
Right? If you look down, it's all different. When you look up, you're in the same place. As recreational and competitive paddlers alike learn to navigate a changed landscape, the return of the Green Race is proof that Western North Carolina's paddling community isn't going anywhere. I don't know if it'll be what it used to be, but it'll be something new, Colburn says.
Yep. Completely different.
Right? So, I mean, if you want to look at the bright side, then yeah, you know what? Yeah, everybody's going down. You knew how to do this. You knew how to do that. Yeah. Yoo-hoo, woo-hoo. Well, now you got a new challenge.
And now it's a brand new run.
Right?
You don't have to go to a new spot. You just have to go to the same spot for a new run.
Right? I mean, when you look at it, when's that going to happen again?
I know, right?
When are you going to get that chance again? Like I said, if you want to put a positive spin on it,
yeah,
you know, which you should.
That's all you can do.
Yeah, you can't just sit there and dwell on the rotten parts. But yeah, it's a total new run. You don't have to go anywhere different. And you just get to build that one up now, this one. So maybe you'll like it better.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Right?
So, like I say, we've talked about Helene just after it happened. Then we talked, you know, what was going to happen in the area this summer, and now this is all sort of the here's what they're doing now. So it'll be interesting to see how much it builds up again this time next year.
Yeah, it's going to be all different again next year. Like they're going to be the recovery phase is going to be a lot bigger, a lot grander, and so on. So the play, because when we reported on this last, it was the shock of it just happening about this time last year, right? So, pardon me. It's we're giving updates as we go, but yeah, right? This time next year we'll be talking about the Green River race again.
Yeah, how it's going for its 31st year.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's not all doom and gloom.
Well, actually, the thought just occurred to me.
Uh-oh.
So they had all these timed races to go down that one run, and so people were trying to do it in sub 4 minutes and
Dane
so on.
Jackson did.
Yeah, and now it's a completely different race. All those old records are going forward, they are a record. But now it's all going to be new.
Right? Who knows? So no one will ever beat Dane Jackson's sub 4 record.
Exactly. Exactly.
You congratulations, can't Dane Jackson.
Yeah, I bet this conversation has come up before.
Oh, right?
Nobody's going to beat his record.
Woo! Well, and you know what? Then you got to look at the new challenge, right? See what the actual time is. Average time is.
Yeah, yeah.
And then next year, somebody's going to try to beat it. And then the following year, someone will try to beat that. And that's how it works.
Very cool, that aspect of it. It just occurred to me this, like, oh, different river, same river.
Yeah.
New records, old records. Old records are locked in.
Yep.
Anyway, just a thought.
Yes, got to have a thought every so often, Derek.
I do try.
I have the ones in the blue moon. That's why I gotta just go there, go with it.
Yeah.
Connecticut, staying down sort of that way, just a little farther north.
Yeah.
Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. So this is for anybody in Connecticut. Well, it's not going to do us any good. But they wanted to get public input after a proposal to add paddleboard rentals to 5 Connecticut state parks. And the agency's taking public comments until November 7th, so next week. Currently, DEEP, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, is only accepting public comments on the draft request for proposal. After the comment period concludes, DEEP officials will then review and consider feedback received and release and announce the final RFP for which proposals will be accepted. Proposals seek partners to operate canoe, kayak, stand-up paddleboard rental services at Hopeville Pond State Park, Indian Well State Park, Mount Tom State Park, Pataconk Reservoir Recreation Area in Kakaponset State Forest, and Squants Pond State Park. Officials say they would like the public to provide comment on the following questions. How will paddlecraft rentals at these locations enhance your experience at the relevant state park? What qualifications or experience should be required of vendors? What factors should be added or removed from the evaluation criteria? How could DEEP make it easier for small and local businesses to apply, qualify, and compete for the final RFP? And do you have other comments on the draft, example, scope of service, terms, selection process, etc.? The agency said general comments or feedback outside these questions are also welcome. In 2024, Deep launched its Office of Outdoor Industry and Experiences by asking businesses, organizations, and the general public to submit ideas to its Partnership in Parks request for information, which resulted in piloting new kayak, canoe, and stand-up paddleboard rental services at four state parks. Popularity and success of these pilot services have demonstrated visitor demand for paddlecraft rental opportunities and extend across multiple seasons and locations. Through the draft RFP, Deep aims to continue the pilots and expand rental and to additional state parks, advancing their goals of enhancing recreation, increasing access, and supporting tourism. Members of the public may submit comments to the draft RFP by email to deep.parkdivisionrfp@ctgov.gov with subject line Paddlecraft Rentals Draft RFP Comments. For more information, just Google the Department of Environment. Whoops, just lost that page. Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. Paddle boards, and you'll get that article no problem with all the information on the questions they're asking and where to send it all. Yeah, so if you can get more people out there at parks and have the access to paddle boards, canoes, kayaks, and whatnot, that's awesome.
They got a lot of state parks, eh? But they're talking about the five biggies for water.
These ones are just looking to expand at these five.
Yeah.
Right okay. now. Because they already did it in a couple, and it's been so popular. Now they want to expand to these five. And if they do that, it becomes even more popular, then I got to assume it will then carry on from there.
They have a Sleeping Giant State Park in Connecticut.
Really?
Yeah.
We have one up in Thunder Bay, do we not?
We do.
Uh-huh.
Up in Superior.
Lots of Sleeping Giants.
Yeah. Their state capital is Hartford. I used to, as a kid, it was my favorite hockey team until they went elsewhere.
Hartford Whalers, baby.
That is correct.
Yep. Oh, the good old days.
Yep.
All righty.
That's interesting. It's nice to see that they are trying to develop new programs and new opportunities for people to get out. And see, I think everybody's kind of waking up to the idea that tourism dollars there's a lot of money in tourism.
Yes.
And it's a replenishing resource, right? It's a renewable resource, is tourism. So the more people you can, bring in from out of state or even out of town, it really increases the tourist dollars. And you see a lot of states are starting to really increase that opportunity for the state. Well, obviously the state is looking for increased tax dollars, but it really advances the opportunities for people for, summer jobs and all year-round jobs and so on. So it's nice that they're doing this. It's neat.
Well, I mean, if you know, I want to go to that one national park, but I wish, I don't feel like bringing a kayak or a canoe or something. And now you find out you can rent one there. That's going to bring in people. And, once they're there, it's not like they just stay there and do that.
No, they're going to do other things.
Yeah, so it's going to bring money into other businesses in the area as well. So that really works out well.
And if you're in town for business, it's like, hey, I'm going to go paddle boarding today. I'm in here for training in Hartford, and I'm going to go paddle, do some paddle boarding, whatever, go find a rental place. It's lots of opportunities.
Stay the weekend and after your business trip is over and have some
fun.
Very
cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
Uh-huh.
That is all I've got this week.
That last one was kind of interesting.
Yeah. That is it. They need to do more stuff like that.
They do.
Because there's a lot of people that would love to do it, but they really don't have the opportunity to buy boats. So to rent one.
No, I know. I know. Perfect. It's easier to rent if you're just learning. It's like, well, I don't know if I'm going to spend the money to own one, or I don't have a place to store one or whatever. Right?
I don't want to buy one and find out I hate it, which I can't see that.
No, but you know what? It could happen. Could happen.
Bite your tongue. What's not like to like about paddling?
Exactly. Exactly. It's nice being on the water.
I had one other thing. What was I? Oh. So, you know how we have listeners all over the world?
Yes.
And people send us little messages once in a while about, yeah, I listen to this, and I listen to that, and tickety-tickety-tick. I got a call out. Keith McKnight from the UK sent me a message. I think I pass it to you. And they're out in BC on a trip, a family trip. Said, heard you on the podcast talking about this place for the past few years. I finally got a double-double and a Boston cream. It didn't disappoint. And he sends a picture holding a Tim Hortons double-double coffee and a Boston cream nice. Donut. If I know nothing else, I know my donuts. And it was followed a few days later by a cup of coffee, Tim Hortons coffee, with the words, addicted. Keith, glad you guys are having a great trip out this way, and unfortunately you didn't get to Toronto, so next time come to Toronto, buddy, and we'll get out some, do some paddling, and have some of this Tim Hortons coffee to get you more addicted. And thanks for listening, and everybody that listens to us, thank you very much for listening.
Thanks for reaching out.
For yabbering. Yeah, send us a message every now and then. We love this sort of thing. But that's my claim to fame. I get people addicted to coffee and donuts. It doesn't matter where you're from.
Yeah, exactly.
You're getting the coffee. You're getting the donuts. Yeah. All right. You got anything else, bud?
I don't have anything to add.
Well, except diseases.
I do have that to contribute.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just keep it there. Not this weekend. The next weekend is the camping weekend.
I get it wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can't make it for the weekend, but I think I'm going in for a day trip on the Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let you know. If you can't make the whole weekend, I'll let you know, and maybe you can. Maybe we'll take both our boats, our new boats.
Yeah.
Right?
How many portages are there? This is a heavy boat.
They say it's one portage, but depending on the water level, because there's rapids and stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe there's no portage.
Yeah.
Well, there's a dam, so there'll be a small portage, but yeah, depends on water level.
If I remember the area...
You've been there before.
Yes, I have. I just can't remember the route. I remember paddling part of it, but I'm confusing part of it with QE2, Provincial Park, because I can remember the end part as QE2, but the start part as where the guys are going.
Well, where they're going is the marina.
Yes, I know the marina. That's why I know the start point. Yes. I just can't remember how to get to the lake they're going to.
Oh, head north.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy.
Leave the marina, keep paddling. Eventually you'll find them.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, get better, bud, and hopefully you...
Yes.
Yeah. Just call in work tomorrow and say, Sean told me not to go into work with my cold.
Well, I had a miserable day today at work, so I might have to do that.
See? Just mention my name.
Yeah.
Just mention my name. They'll go, who?
Who's that?
Who's that guy? Alrighty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download and stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page on paddlingadventuresradio.com and stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.